It's the middle of summer, and lots of people are making the climb up Mount Baldy. It's this giant sand dune in Indiana, right on the edge of Lake Michigan. It's over 100 feet tall. As people get to the top, they look out across the lake, and there's this great view of the Chicago skyline. On this particular day, July 12th, 2013, the Wasners, a family from Illinois, are on their way up. Their six-year-old son, Nathan, is playing and laughing with another kid around his age. Until suddenly, the boys cry out in panic. The family turns around, and Nathan is gone. What's left is just a hole in the dune. It's deep and dark, perfectly round, and about a foot across. And from somewhere deep inside the dune, they can hear Nathan's voice calling out. His family claws at the dune, but each time they dig down, the sand just immediately fills back in. Finally, a huge team of rescuers arrive at the scene, and for 3 harrowing hours, they dig and dig. They excavate over 400 tons of sand, until finally, they find Nathan. He's 12 feet under the surface. His body is cold, pale, and has no pulse. But a paramedic notices something. On Nathan's cheek is a cut, and it's bleeding, which means his heart is still pumping. He's alive. After a week in the hospital, Nathan makes a full recovery. But there's one thing about this whole incident that no one could figure out, and it had to do with the sand.
Now, if you know anything about sand, there's no way you can fall in a hole in sand. So that made everybody start thinking.
How did this even happen in the first place? This is Points North, a podcast about the land, water, and inhabitants of the Great Lakes. I'm Dan Wanchura. Today we're featuring an episode from the Atlas Obscura podcast, a celebration of the world's strange, incredible, and wondrous places. Dylan Thuris digs into the secrets hidden under Mount Baldy right after this.
Points North is brought to you in part by Cherry Republic, celebrating Northern Michigan's tart cherries with products like jams, barbecue sauces, chocolate-covered cherries, and more. Online at cherryrepublic.com. And Aspire North Realtors, bringing real estate professionals together, supporting their involvement in the community, and advocating for the industry in a sustainable way. Online at aspirenorthrealtors.com.
If you were standing on the lakeshore looking at Mount Baldy, you'd be looking at a dune that would be about 126 feet there.
This is Cookie Ferguson. She's a park ranger at the Indiana Dunes National Park around the southern tip of Lake Michigan. And Cookie says the reason Mount Baldy has the name it does is pretty simple. It's bald.
It never had a lot of vegetation. A lot of our sand dunes don't at the very top. And I think it was just known by that.
This wasn't necessarily always the case, or at least Mount Baldy wasn't always completely bald, like maybe sort of comb-over bald, some dune pattern baldness. In other words, it used to have more vegetation than it does now.
You know, we have a grass called mirum grass. It's a tall grassy plant. It's probably maybe 2-3 feet tall. Its roots go out like 10 feet in each direction to hold that plant so the wind doesn't move it. The leaves of the plant, if you run your fingers up, you could almost cut yourself because they're really sharp on the outside. And the purpose of that is to catch blowing sand granules and to slide it back down to the ground so that sand dune doesn't move.
But around 100 years ago, Mount Baldy became a popular tourist destination.
There was a train stop about a mile from the lakeshore. Now you have to envision back in the 1920s, people coming out from Chicago on this train, and the ladies had their long dresses on, their parasols, their big hats, their buckle shoes with heels, coming out to the dunes.
People built little beach shacks along the dune and trails in between them. And since Mount Baldy was one of the highest dunes in the area, people also liked to climb it. But every time they tromped over the dune, the mirum grass and other vegetation would get kicked up and die. And over time, Mount Baldy got balder.
So they had killed the vegetation on the dune, which meant that the dune itself, the sand, when we had our north winds, was able to pick up the sand kernels and drop it in the back, picking it up, dropping in the back, actually moving the sand dune away from the lake shore.
That's right. Besides just balding, Mount Baldy is also moving.
It has moved, well, we think it moves about 5 feet a year.
Some other factors have contributed here too. Building out the harbor in Lake Michigan changed current patterns, which impacted how sand was deposited. An even bigger dune that once neighbored Mount Baldy, called the Hoosier Slide, was mined and its sand was used for glass. If you've ever picked up an old ball jar and noticed that it had a bluish tint, that is the sand from the Hoosier Slide. Anyway, as a result, Mount Baldy is pretty unstable. And over time, the dune has taken on the shape of a moving parabola, a kind of flowing curve.
The vegetation on each side of you, left and right, is solid. So that is almost on the lakeshore. But the part that's moving is a parabolic, you know, in the middle. It's moving back. So it's kind of like a horseshoe, and then it's moving back that way. The parking lot for Mount Baldy used to be an oval, and now it's straight in and out because Mount Baldy has moved that much. And there's really nothing you can do about it. You know, once sand, once nature starts moving, it's going to move.
So Mount Baldy, this living, moving dune. And that part of the dune story was pretty well understood. But it did not explain what had happened to Nathan Wasner on July 12th, 2013.
We thought we knew Mount Baldy.
That summer afternoon, as the rescue of Nathan Wasner was underway, there just so happened to be another person on the dune who would turn out to be a really important part of this story.
There was a geologist on Mount Baldy with her class. She was there, Erin Aguilon, and she knew from all of her studies in geology that this cannot happen. So this bothered her a great deal, which led to a lot of the studies that we now have on Mount Baldy.
Geologist Erin Aguilon became obsessed with figuring out how Nathan's disappearance was even possible, how there could even be an open void in a sand dune. So she and her colleagues at Indiana University Northwest started conducting tests on Mount Baldy using ground-penetrating radar to get at what was going on underneath.
What they found out was that before this glacier, the last glacier, did this big deposit of sand dune, which we thought was the deposit, there was a glaciation period thousands of years before that also deposited sand.
In other words, it turned out that buried beneath Mount Baldy was another, even older sand dune.
And as the vegetation grows on that sand and dies, it puts down a layer of dirt where more vegetation can grow, and more vegetation can grow. And this happened long enough so that there were oak trees that were actually growing on this bottom dune.
But then, as Mount Baldy began to move over this older dune, sand covered up these oak trees.
Oak trees kind of decay from the inside out. And so these oak trees that were supported in these sand columns were decaying from the inside out and actually becoming what we call the chimneys that were in the sand.
These chimneys take the shape of deep cylindrical holes, basically the casts of these dead tree trunks.
When they're exposed, they only stay exposed for an hour or maybe a little time because they're fragile. So wind or animals or anything makes them break. And then once they break down below sand level, sand falls in just like you would expect it would. And they're covered up. So that's what happened to Nathan. He was caught in one of those chimneys, decomposition chimneys, in this dune, all because of the movement of the dune.
10 years on, Nathan Wasner is fully recovered from his experience inside of Mount Baldy. Today, he's a student at a nearby high school.
Funny enough, he doesn't remember any of that. He probably remembers the hospital, but he doesn't remember falling in the hole.
But there have been changes to the dune and the park. You can no longer climb to the top of Mount Baldy on your own, but you can go on a ranger-led hike and maybe even see some of these decomposition chimneys for yourself, firsthand. In recent years, there have been efforts to replant vegetation like marum grass all along Mount Baldy to help stabilize it.
By keeping people off the top of that, the vegetation has started to come back, so it's a good thing.
But in the meantime, the dune keeps moving and moving and moving.
Eventually, it's going to move away from the lakefront. It will probably go across our parking lot, probably across the highway that, you know, is on the other side of the parking lot. Probably just keep going. 5 feet a year. Nature's always changing things.
Dylan Thuris with that story. The Atlas Obscura podcast is a co-production of Atlas Obscura and Stitcher Studios. The episode was produced by Amanda McGowan. Their production team includes Doug Baldinger, Chris Naka, Camille Stanley, Manolo Morales, Baudelaire, and Gabby Gladney. Technical director is Casey Holford. This episode was mixed by Luce Fleming. Theme and end credit music by Sam Tyndall. If you want to learn more about Atlas Obscura, visit atlasobscura.com. I'm Dan Wanshura. You can find more stories from all around the Great Lakes at pointsnorthpodcast.org or listen wherever you find podcasts. Points North is a production of Interlochen Public Radio.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.